Coaches, I wanted to take a quick minute before we jump into today's episode to remind you about the power of our Green Team Framework. Now, if you're a coach who's been with us for many years, you know how powerful the Green Team is. And for all those that are new, you need to take advantage of it starting today. In fact, we guarantee that within 30 days, you will have more committed, consistent, and competitive athletes in your program once you implement the 7 parts of the Green Team Framework. It's a leadership framework that, as one of our coaches in St. Louis said, is like leadership cheat code. It's as if we figured out all the right buttons to push to get your players to level up. So, coach, if you haven't gotten started with Lead 'Em Up, get involved today and start taking advantage of the leadership framework, the Green Team Framework that will transform your program. And if you're already in Lead 'Em Up, you know the power of the Green Team. We just want to encourage you, keep building your Green Team. Keep going deeper. Keep reaping the benefits. Hey, listen, make sure you're building your Green Team. But in the meantime, enjoy today's episode. You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A.
Welcome back to the Lead 'Em Up podcast. I am Kyle alongside Adam. And today we're here to talk about a really important topic, Adam, one that gets brought up a lot in conversations with head coaches. And it's one that I think could really serve all of our coaches well, whether they're in the head coaching role as an assistant, and then the first year coaches, people that are just kind of starting out in their journey as a coach. And it all kind of comes back to the question of, how do I coach my coaches? How can I help them grow? And along with that, sometimes comes the challenge of increasing the buy-in within a program. So where I'd like to kind of start the conversation is first is let's think about the young coaches that join a program or that are new to a school. How can they quickly become acclimated to the program, the philosophy, and how do you coach them on the vision of that? So, you know, for me, I think that's one of the most important roles that a head coach has, because the players are really in tune today. They're really in the know of what's going on, and they can kind of sense things. So I think from a culture standpoint, this is one of the most important things that you have to get right as a head coach and as a coaching staff, is getting everyone on the same page. So when you think about that, Adam, what are some thoughts that run through your mind, or what are some suggestions that immediately come to mind for, you know, coaching your coaches, those that are early in their professional career here?
I mean, yeah, there's so many places to go on this conversation, you know, because it's such a big and it's a big task, but it's one that we have to be really intentional with. And it's really going to, you know, I would say the third component for a head coach, it will put on display your leadership aptitude. First being, can you lead yourself, coach? Secondly, can you lead your team? Third, can you lead your fellow coaches? Can you build them up? Yeah. Can you equip them? And, you know, the first place that I go to, Kyle, is I just think it's so important that coaches begin to work to try to find out, what do they have within their coaching staff? Like, what are the capabilities of their coaches? What is the capacity of what they can handle? Where is their passion? Where is their strength? Where do they need to be? And seeing if, you know, for you to gain that understanding, I think that almost is like the foundation. Like, what do I have? Like, yeah. What do I truly have? And then the hope there is that what you have lines up with what you need, right? You hope those two things line up perfectly. But you may find that what you have isn't what you need. And I think that's important to know early in the beginning as well, right? Or coming to that conclusion. But for me, Kyle, I think, as a head coach, you need to understand truly the strengths, the weaknesses, the passions, the skill set, the current level of aptitude. You need to have a very clear understanding. And I'd also say just understanding their goals, what they want to accomplish. Where do they want to go in their coaching career? I think all of those factors, almost doing a 360 evaluation of your coaches to truly understand where they're at, where their mindset's at, what they're bringing to the table, where they want to go with this. I think from there, now you can start strategizing. You can start effectively coaching them in the way that is aligned to them, that's aligned to where you want to go. You start pouring into them. You start giving them space and opportunities to show you. But Kyle, I think sitting down and spending time deeply understanding where they're at, what they can do, where they want to go. I mean, when I say like sitting down, I'm talking hour, 2 hour intentional conversation, continual intentionality over the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You know, I don't know if it ever fully ends because people, they change and things change. But Kyle, that's where I go. I think you need to just gain deep insight and then from there start building.
Yeah, I love the point that you make there about understanding their passions. And to me, it's always, I heard someone say this the other day, and it rings true. It's kind of one of those old adages that's never going to go old is, the best teachers approach their classroom like a coach, and the best coaches approach it like a teacher. They go hand in hand. And the reason why I bring that up is because essentially you have to have a backward design approach to your program, one like a teacher would have in the classroom. So before you even get to the full program, or before you even get to the full coaching staff and have like your big staff meeting, I think you hit the nail on the head. You have to sit down and have those conversations with the coach and figure out what their passion is. Like, what part of the sport are they most excited about? Is there a certain element of it? Like, if we're talking football, are they really a special teams person, or are they more of a defensive mindset? In basketball, what's their philosophy? Are they a team that likes to run and gun and shoot a lot of threes, or are they like a team that likes to kind of play the pack line defense and slow it down on offense? So you got to understand their passions, their talents, what they're good at. And then you can kind of start to mold things around that.
Yeah. And, do they want to be behind the scenes? Do they want to be more out front? Is their personality more of the organizer that's going to maybe collect data, maybe organize things on the back end, almost more of like a manager of sorts, right? A program manager, kind of managing so many of these tasks. Do they gain energy from the interactions directly with the players? Do they want to be a head coach in the future? Or are they just content, I got a busy life and I just want to be connected, but I don't have any desire for that over responsibility of a head coach. I just want to be part of it. Okay, great. And I think what also that allows you to do is it helps you understand really how much am I going to invest in you, and how deeply are you willing to let me lead you? Right. Yeah. If you sit here and say, hey, I want to be a head coach. I want this. I want to move up the ranks. I want to make this my career. I want to make this my passion. Then, okay, fantastic. Well, recognized, okay, now I get to dial up my leadership a little more intensely on you because you're claiming you want this. So now let me lead it at a greater capacity with maybe more fervor. Maybe I'm going to put more on you. Maybe I'm going to challenge you greater and see what you have there. But all of that, once again, I think, I don't know if you'd come up with a term, but like the foundation setting, the information gathering, and it's got to be deeply gathered, not just like surface level application interview process. I'm talking even beyond that. Interview, you're going to get kind of high level understanding, but deeply kind of unpacking that in the early process is going to be so key. From there then, Kyle, it's tough because you can go so many different directions depending on what they say, right? Depending on what they want out of it, depending on what their goals and their passions and all that. I'm going to tell you what I just think coaches have to be very, very conscious of is, so coaches have, I think when you are equipping, when you are empowering, there has to be truly, coaches have to be able to give their assistant coaches the ability to show what they can do.
Yeah, 100%.
Truly show you, like, and allow them to show you, like, yes, I can get it done at that level, or I can't. But they need to be able to show you fully. And coaches are going to have to struggle with that, because coaches typically, there's a couple of dynamics that they coaches frankly tend to be controlling.
Yeah, it's tough for people to give up that freedom and that control. It's absolutely a challenge.
And I know that control sounds, you know, tough, and it's almost like you're labeling someone. But, you know, when you go deeper into this theme of control, here's what it says. It says your worth and security as a coach, and this is true, okay? And I'm pulling some stuff out of some of the work that I do in my practitioning through the leadership circle, where it talks about leaders that tend to control, that leaders tend to control at times because their self-worth and security is tied to accomplishments and achievements. So what it says is that, like, when my team does well, when the program's thriving, when we're winning, I feel more worthwhile as an individual and I feel more secure in my job. If you ask any coach, they would agree with that. They would agree that when the job is done and they're winning and things are going well, they feel better, that worthwhileness, i.e., because the sport and the coaching is connected to their identity. So when it does well, it improves the worth of their identity. They feel more worthwhile and they feel more secure in their place, in their position as the head coach. So if my worth and security, Kyle, is tied to the results, to the accomplishments, to the achievements, to my team doing well, us winning, our program doing well, our players thriving, then there's a lot at stake if it doesn't go right. A lot at stake, deeply at stake. So therefore, what does it do? It causes leaders to control deeper because there's so much at stake. Now,
yeah, it makes sense.
Now, those tendencies to control are driven even greater because most coaches have three deeper tendencies that drive control. They're directly tied to control, Kyle. Here's the first one. They usually have perfection tendencies, because they want to perform at a high, high level, heroic level, exceed expectations. Secondly, they have driven tendencies. Most coaches, head coaches, hard workers. They're not afraid to put in hours. Third, they have ambitious tendencies. They want to pursue growth. They want to grow. They want to win, right? There's ambition. So think about this. Perfection, drive, and ambition, those three tendencies fuel the controlling tendencies within leadership. And it's all tied to your worth and security. Now, none of those things are bad things, but I'm going somewhere with this. You have to recognize that those live inside of most coaches. And their tendencies, meaning their default behaviors. You don't have to, someone doesn't have to motivate you to want to do great work, right? You just do it. It's a tendency. It's a default behavior. But then you look at, like, what's the cost of that? Because it's not bad, but does it have the potential to interfere, to interrupt or distract, or, you know, cause me not to thrive in my leadership? Well, a couple of the areas, interesting, that it has direct effect on. One, four areas in particular. One is their work-life balance. That's why most coaches are exhausted.
Burnout.
They're burned out. Because they're controlling everything. They're involved in everything. They want everything done at such a high level. They're driven. They're ambition. They go, 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 do, 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 boom, boom, boom. And they're controlling everything. They're involved in everything. Boom, now they're burned out. So their work-life balance dips. Kyle, secondly, their composure dips. They're not as irritable, or they're more irritable. Their tone changes. They're not as patient with people. They're not as willing to work alongside and kind of go through the process with people. Their composure dips. On the other side, two additional things that dip when your controlling tendency spikes out: your mentoring and developing. Now, all of a sudden, I have a tension, Kyle, because I know I need to coach up my coaches and mentor and develop them.
Yep.
But man, I feel like I know I can do it better and faster myself. And I want to do it better and faster because it how it's done reflects on me, my worth and security. So maybe, so all of a sudden I find myself not mentoring and developing as much because I control everything. I'm doing everything. I tell the coaches, hey, send it over and I'll finish it from here. Hey, why don't, you know what? I'll go ahead and I'll watch it. I'll let you know what I think, right? All these moments of mentoring and development, it's almost like the coach does it because of that deep tendency. The last thing that gets interfered with is delegation.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Because now I'm not delegating as much. Why? Because I'm controlling it. And why am I controlling it? My worth, security is tied to accomplishments and achievements. I've got these deeper laying tendencies of perfection, drive, and ambition. It's all forming together. It's why I bring up the fact that coaches, you're going to have to wrestle with that. And you're going to have to let go at times and give things to your coaches. So one, you can work through that giving up with them to mentor and develop them. So secondly, you can see what you truly have in them. So you then now know where to start your leadership on them, right? I don't need to start here at a low level. If I give a task to someone and I see that they completed it at a high level, now I know what I have. I've given them a chance to prove to me what they are capable of doing. And now I can adjust accordingly. So, but it's gonna be a tough fight to give it up because coaches tend to want to keep it in, to grab a hold.
This is Jason Barnes from Chick-fil-A, and this is your Leadership Nugget. Michael Jordan said, "My best skill was that I was coachable. I was a sponge and aggressive to learn." Being coachable is an essential skill everyone needs to possess. When we receive instruction, feedback, or correction, our job is to take what someone is giving us and use it to get better. When you are teaching other leaders or new and existing employees, ensure you start with the expectation that everyone needs to be coachable in order to learn. Be like Mike and be a sponge. Soak up what you are being taught. Always be willing to learn and get better. When you get better, everyone around you gets better. Now, let's jump back into the episode.
Yeah, I think that's natural. Like you said, most coaches want to have that because of the way that the results carries or it looks upon them. And I think, you know, when that happens, you know, personally, that was the greatest experience or gift that I had as a young coach, is coaching JV boys basketball. And the head coach just basically said, you know, run it like you would your own team. Like, it's yours, run it. And there wasn't, you know, we ran the same kind of philosophy stuff on offense and defense, but there was freedom to coach it, to have my hands in it day to day, to run the practices, to run the games. He wasn't telling me what to put on the practice plan. He wasn't sitting on the bench calling the plays. And I was always so appreciative of that, because we would play other teams to where the head coach was sitting on the bench in the JV game, coaching the game. And the poor assistant was just sitting there with their hands in their lap. And then the coach would leave at a little after halftime to go get the varsity team ready. And now the JV coach has a half a game to sit there and try to coach. And it was like, to me, it kind of undermined their development or their ability. And I felt like having that opportunity as a younger coach really helped me to grow. And then I think it allowed him to be a better mentor, because I was coming to him with questions of what to do or how he saw things, rather than him having to tell me it off the bat. So I think that allows the coaches to be a great mentor without having to be the ones that initiate it, to where the younger coaches or the assistants, they feel like, okay, I have the freedom here. I want to make sure I get this right, or this is how he sees it or she sees it, how they do it. I think that in the long run is the best approach, kind of going back to the delegation, is if you've got people in your program where they want to be a head coach at someday, let them have the reins, let them take it. And then you're able to kind of guide them and mold them to fit your program.
I'll say you have to balance that. And I agree with that, but You know, there could be a coach listening right now, though, that says, Kyle, well, listen, man, I hear what you're saying. I hear what Adam said a moment ago. But at the end of the day, it does still fall on me. Right. I am the one responsible for it. So I hear all this letting go, giving that freedom and autonomy to go and operate. But, man, if it doesn't go well, I get called. I'm the one whose name's in the headline. I'm the head coach. And you're totally right. So you have to do it in a slow ramping of release. I'm not saying, oh, go let the assistant tomorrow start running everything without any oversight. No, you have to slow ramp that release of control, but you need to first be aware that it's present so you now can manage it accordingly. But what does that slow ramp look like? Hey, you know what? Listen, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to let you run with this. Why don't you give this a shot? Why don't you bring it to light? Hey, but before you release it, let's just, you know, I'd still like to take a look at it with you. So maybe all of a sudden it's like, hey, why don't you show me, like, you create the practice plan, but hey, before we go to practice, I do want to look over it really quick. Now, one could argue and say, well, that's not really letting go. That still feels like controlling. Well, no, it's baby steps. I'm slowly ramping there. It would be foolish for me not to have any oversight over it. But I want to quickly look over it, see if there's some mentoring opportunities within it. And make sure we're headed in the right direction, make sure we're aligned, make sure we are operating at the level. And maybe it goes from like every day, show me your lesson plan to, you know, maybe a month from now, it's, hey, why don't we do a weekly recap on the lesson plan, on the coaching, right? Rather than me every day kind of being engaged, maybe now I give you feedback weekly. So I'm giving you a little bit more freedom over time. Right. But you have to manage that because it does still fall to you. Now, in those moments when you are trying to give them more to develop them and mentor them and let them show you and others what they have and build confidence for themselves, those interactions, you have to be very careful too, that you don't try to like then jump in and just correct, because correcting is not coaching. Right. It is a form of coaching, but it isn't necessarily the most effective. When you study executive coaches, when you study coaching from a licensing standpoint, hey, I'm a licensed certified coach, things of that nature. There's a core competency that all coaches have, and it is they believe that the individuals they are coaching have an element of resourcefulness, meaning they have it in them to know it and to figure it out. And great coaches pull it out of them rather than push it onto them. So rather than me telling you the right way to do it, great coaches are going to ask the questions to help you land on the understanding yourself. Not to actually simply say, no, you need to do it this way, but to ask the questions. Hey, do you envision that everyone will be engaged if you do it that way? Hey, could you envision a way that that if you did it, is there a way that we could do it where maybe we'd be able to get triple the reps in the same amount of time? Is there any way you think you could structure that? I could tell you because I know how we could get triple the efficiency of the reps in this same amount of time. I know it. I've done it for 20 years. I'm a coach. I'm a head coach. I've been there. That's not coaching. That's me telling. Coaching is, hey, is there any way, you know, that you could envision kind of adjusting that drill so everyone gets triple the amount of touches during the same time period? You know, because I think it's so important that we maximize our minutes. What are your thoughts there? Right. Okay. And then let them start processing it, right? And let them start thinking. And all of a sudden, maybe you keep asking questions and they're figuring out, and boom, they figured out. That's resourcefulness. They actually had it in them to figure it out. They just needed your guidance, your mentoring to help them land in what they already knew. You know, there's a story of coaching that's really fantastic. It's about a tennis camp up in Vermont where the campers attended this tennis camp for the week. And as the campers are there for this week of tennis camp, they realized the morning or the night before the camp began, they started getting worried, the camp directors, that the tennis coaches' travel was getting backed up and delayed. And that there was concern that the trial or the tennis coaches weren't going to be able to make it in for the first day of camp. And the directors that oversee the camp, they're freaking out a little bit. They're like, man, what are we going to do with all these tennis players? Like, you know, they've paid big money to be at this tennis camp. Our instructors that we're flying in are getting delayed because the travel may not make it here on time, this, that, another. So the camp director said, well, we need some form of supervision on the campers. So they went and they grabbed the ski coaches. They grabbed the ski coaches, being up in the Northeast, Vermont, and said, listen, I know this is a downtime. It's summer camp. You're not obviously teaching ski right now. Would you be willing to coach the tennis players for the first day or two until the tennis camp instructors arrive? Ski instructor said, sure. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll make a little money. All of a sudden, they did it. And it was actually a fascinating revelation. At the end of the week ended up getting split half the time with ski instructors, half the time with tennis instructors. At the end of the camp week, all the tennis players, the camp attendees, had to do a survey, evaluated all the staff, gave back reviews, and the ski instructors actually proved, scoring-wise, to be the more effective and more dynamic tennis instructor than the actual tennis instructors themselves.
That's crazy.
I interviewed some of the tennis campers and tried to gain understanding, not interviewing like a TV sense, but asked for feedback and had some commentary. What they learned is that the ski instructors, because they did not try because they couldn't and didn't know, they couldn't operate from a telling standpoint. Do this, do that. They actually had to pull it out of the tennis players to help them understand, but in the process was actually helping the tennis players learn greater. One of the tennis players talked about her ability to grow and her ability to read the spin of a ball because of the ski instructor. And she said, well, how did the ski instructor coach you on that? And she actually broke it down. She said that the ski instructor started asking questions. Hey, how do you know? You know, hey, how do you always make sure you hit it cleanly? And the girl goes, well, you got to keep your eye on the ball. Well, how do you know you're keeping your eye on the ball? Well, you just got to look for the spin. Well, how do you know you're actually seeing the spin of the ball? Are you able to tell? And she goes, yeah. He goes, then tell me what spin the ball is on this next hit. And all of a sudden she has to stop and really intentionally focus. And all of a sudden examine the spin of the ball, and she hit it back. She said, that one was spinning right. Wow, how'd you know? How about this one? Yeah, that one had a slight left spin. So then what do you do when it spins left? Well, I think you should hit it then towards the left because it will go in the direction of the spin. All of a sudden, the tennis players were coaching, right? They were coaching the ski instructors, but in the process, they were learning and processing things that they kind of did by natural, but never were able to fully do at a level where they could communicate it, coach it, teach it. They say the highest level of learning is when you can verbalize, articulate, and teach it to others. Right. And they were doing that the whole week. I share all that to say, be careful, because what is the tendency? Keep your eye on the ball. Keep your eye on the ball. It's just to tell them what to do, not necessarily to coach them through what to do.
Yeah, you got to give that space.
To give them space, pull it out of them. Ask the questions. So when your coaches are coming to you and you're trying to slow ramp that release of control to give them space to mentor and develop them, you're going to have to fight those urges at times to want to jump in and just tell them what to do. And pause. Pull it out of them. Ask the questions and try to guide them to the learning spot. Right. It's a shift because our tendency, once again, just to answer it. That's, I don't know if that's fully coaching at the level that it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And the like you said, the best experience on that and the best teacher is going through that process and allowing them to experience all that comes with it. So giving them that ability and space to go through it, to ask the questions, to process how they would teach it, analyze the reactions and how it could be done better. And one of the last things I wanted to bring up on this, because this is a question that gets kind of brought up frequently hear amongst the lead 'em up coaches, especially head coaches, is when you have a large group, and this is something I talked with a coach on the past week here, is, you know, we got a large program here coming out in the spring, and we've got hundreds of athletes. This is a track program. We've got a couple hundred athletes that could potentially be involved, well over 100. How do we teach this? How do we get this to everyone in the program without losing the impact? And I think when you're talking about a leadership development program, a character development curriculum, you know, anything like Lead 'Em Up and how you're teaching it to your athletes, is it's got to be something that involves your coaches. It, again, as the head coach, it can't just be done through one person. And I think this is, again, where we need to rely on our coaches and have them be an extension of us towards that product. And I think the best thing that we can do is to give them the opportunity to lead it, to go through it, to experience it. Because like we tell our athletes, you know, the more players that we have on a team acting as leaders, the better the team's going to perform. You know, player-led teams win more than coach-led teams. Well, the same is true on a coaching staff. The more coaches you have that are bought in and on board, that are speaking the language, that are really in tune with what's going on, it has that ripple effect throughout the entire program. And the kids pick up on that. So again, this is one of those things when we talk about like coaching your coaches, and when you get to like the leadership and the character space, is that you have to incorporate them and give them the opportunities to find their voice, to go through it, and to be someone that feels confident delivering that to the athletes. Because the more people you have in that, the tighter that community gets and the better that culture feels for everyone in the program.
You're right on. And I'll say this as we wrap up here. You have to. Like, this is something you have to get right. And I'll tell you one reason you have to get it right. Sorry, I'll share two reasons why you have to get it right. One is you will burn yourself out if you don't. That's one.
Sure.
Okay.
That's absolute.
You will burn yourself out if you are not able to equip and to empower, to delegate with confidence to other people. The second reason you have to get this right is if you don't mentor them very well, you will begin to resent them. And this is a real thing for coaches. And when I say resent them, that sounds harsh, but it is actually referencing you will begin to resent them within their duties, because you will begin to get frustrated that they're not at the level you need them to be at, that they haven't grown to the level you need, that, you know, you've had this assistant coach for whatever amount of time, and they're not that they still haven't grasped the concept. They still haven't learned the defense. They still haven't been able to effectively manage a practice. You still don't feel fully confident that they can manage substitutions, that, you know, that if something were to happen, heaven forbid for you, where you had to miss a game, that you don't feel fully confident that they could take over and lead if had to, that if you were to get thrown out of a game, that you just think it all fall apart, you'd end up beginning to resent them because they're not at the level that you need them to be at. But you could argue and look back at the coach and say, well, did you mentor them enough? Did you develop them enough? Were they so dependent on you? Did everything have to run through you that it never actually got them to that level? You have to build them up so you don't get to that potential place as well. And that's a real place.
That's a good point.
It's a real place.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah, coaches, I mean, this is, like Adam said at the beginning, this is a topic here that has a lot of different layers. There's so many directions that we could go with this, but, you know, really the heart of this and with anything that we do and Lead 'Em Up and on the podcast is to really grow as coaches and as leaders of our program. And, you know, if we're going to continue to grow in that role, then we need to rely on the people in our program and to equip them to really excel in their role, to help them grow as coaches, and to give them that space, like we said, to where they can, you know, go through that process of learning how to coach, because it's such an art. And it's not something that someone can be told how to do. It's something that they have to experience. So coaches, we would love to hear from you on this. We know we've got a lot of experienced coaches out there who've been through this, both as a young coach and as an experienced coach. We'd love to have you share some of your best tips and practices, things that maybe you were taught, a lesson that you were mentored on that can maybe help someone else out in this profession. So on behalf of Adam and the entire Lead 'Em Up team, I am Kyle. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.